Before we get started today, I just wanted to give a quick note to our listeners on today's content. This episode will be talking about sexual misconduct, and it does talk about sex. It's intended for adult audiences only, and we advise listener discretion for use of graphic language and frank portrayal of sex and rape. It's an extremely important conversation to have. However, we completely understand that this is a sensitive topic, and you should only listen if you feel comfortable with these topics, since we do talk about it pretty openly. Thank you. Hey there, you're listening to Virago Pod, a podcast that is dedicated to empowering and improving the physical and mental health of female athletes everywhere.
This podcast is brought to you by The Virago Project, a nonprofit organization that helps female athletes balance sports with life.
I'm your host, Emily McGee Zaslowski.
And I'm your co-host, Taylor Tracy. Let's jump right into the episode.
Hi, Virago Pod listeners. This is episode 16. As you heard in our little episode preview, this conversation today is about sexual misconduct and is an extremely important one to have. And thank you for joining us. Today's podcast, we have an athlete named Rachel, who has requested to remain anonymous. And we did edit out some of her identifying information and even some of her stories to make sure that she stays kind of protected and vague here. But she speaks very openly about the culture of athlete-on-athlete sexual misconduct and changes the conversation around how society view, you know, college parties, the sex life, and what really is rape. We get into what consent is and isn't, and it's a conversation that I think really needs to be had. It's unfortunately a topic that has impacted a lot of athletes, and I don't get into it on this episode. It's something that honestly hardly any of my teammates know about. I just opened up to it about Taylor earlier this week when I told her we were filming this episode, but I was sexually assaulted in college, and this is a topic that I think just needs more awareness. So this episode is the first step to the Virago Pods kind of talking about this. I mentioned we're looking to have some other support services join us in a podcast, but this is phenomenal because I think we talk about some great things that is a takeaway that current athletes, current coaches, or really anyone in a friends group, anyone that has people that they care about that they can take. And since we do know this discussion is extremely sensitive, we do have in our description contact information for RAINN, R-A-I-N-N, if you want to Google it also. They are survivor support. So if this episode brings up anything or you want someone to talk to, has so many resources, not just for learning, but to talk and reach out to someone. Unfortunately, even within your friend group, just with the statistics, there's probably been someone in your family and friends group that's been sexually assaulted. So this episode will be the first of a few that we have. This is from an athlete's view. And so I'll go ahead and bring Rachel on now. It's just Rachel and myself, Emily, on today's episode. Thank you so much for listening, as it's something, obviously, that we are really passionate about and want to bring more awareness to in the athletic community. All right, and welcome back. On today's podcast, we have an athlete named Rachel joining us today, and we are going to talk about a huge issue in the sports community, and that's kind of centered around a conversation we've had before about how male-dominated the sports industry is, and this inequality and power dynamic among genders kind of leads to a breeding ground of issues in sexual harassment, assault, especially on college campuses. A recent study showed that college athletes were found in recent years to be 3 times more likely than other students to be accused of sexual misconduct. So it's not just even these student athletes are at a higher risk. It's even this athlete on athlete bias that people are looking at. I was doing a little research before this podcast and found that there's actually a lawsuit going on right now about the NCAA and Title IX's ability to protect athletes from other athletes, and kind of the way that these female athletes were accusing that the NCAA was covering up male violence. Now, here at Virago Project, we 100% accept that this is not just a male-on-female issue. There is many instances of female-on-male sexual assault. However, since we are focusing on women in sport, we're going to be looking through that lens today of female sexual assault prevalency in female athletes. So on today's podcast, Rachel, who's on the line, is talking more about the gender disparity that she experienced in kind of a unique situation. So, Rachel, I understand you had an elite youth sports experience, but weren't necessarily planning on playing a sport in college. So your recruitment path and even the little composition of your team might be a little non-traditional for the female athlete. Can you tell our listeners a little about yourself and how you decided to compete in college?
Yeah, I'm originally from the Washington, D.C. area. I go to a D3 NESCAC university. And I'm on the men's rowing team, but I am a woman. So rowing teams have rowers, obviously, and then there is a special position called a coxswain. The coxswain is kind of the intermediary between the rowers, the athletes, and the coaches. And so, first of all, I steer the boats, so I'm driving. But I'm also keeping track of time, keeping track of technical things in the boat. I'm running practice with the other coxswains, so running drills, running race pieces. I'm in charge of planning and executing race plans during racing. It's a big responsibility, and female or women are frequently on men's teams in the rowing world. That's not unusual at all, because coxswains are supposed to be smaller, and women tend to be smaller than men. So, yeah, I am a college student right now. I'm triple majoring in political science, international relations, and French. So I have a lot going on. And I also want to preface everything that we say by, first of all, saying that I'm clearly not an expert on anything that we're talking about. I don't study, I'm not an adult. I don't study sexual misconduct. I am just someone that has researched it a little bit and have experiences that I think are interesting. And also, the experiences that I have are all going to be mostly through a very heteronormative lens. So you already mentioned we're talking mostly male misconduct directed at females. But again, that's not to say that female misconduct directed at men doesn't exist, or, you know, between all genders, any genders, it definitely happens. We're just, my experience is mostly very traditionally heteronormative. Okay.
Yeah. And Rachel, actually, so Taylor and I was talking about this podcast, and we, you know, obviously here at Virago Pod, one of our main thing is sharing athlete stories, which this 100% is, but I fell into such a rabbit hole of research that we decided that we are going to bring some experts on in a future podcast to discuss, one, what we talked about. So anything that you said that we're going to be able to be like, hey, is this what you see in, you know, common in campuses? So at no means, if you have any questions, you're like, I would love if this is a normal experience, or I would love to ask an expert this, please feel free just to say it in this podcast, and we'll be sure to keep track of these and write it down for our follow-up interview where we have that more of an expert lens. But yeah, that's perfect.
Cool.
So we, Taylor and I, would regularly like scrimmage with and play with some of the guys on the men club team. And, you know, it was like a fun environment, but it's hard to wrap my head around really like being fully surrounded, you know, like immersed in the actual team culture. So what kind of team dynamic does that team have? And how is that different from when you were on an all female team?
Yeah, so it's super different. I mean, I'm going to preface all of this by saying that I love my teammates. I love being on a men's team. It's so much fun. But it is very, very different. They're way less aware of social hierarchies. It's just one big team. And, you know, like any, I think male or female team, like, they're funny. They're invested in each other. They're invested in me. It's, you know, like lots of athletics, but like, I don't understand a lot of the social rules that govern male relationships. it's harder for me to make surface level interactions to get to know my teammates. Like, I just don't understand the Star Wars references that they make.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I had to watch all the Marvel movies. Well, I didn't have to. I decided to watch all the Marvel movies in sequential order so I could understand those references. I haven't seen the Star Wars, but, you know, like, I miss a lot of parts of their humor, their appropriate humor and some of their inappropriate humor. Like, we eat dinner a lot together when it's not COVID in the dining halls, and, like, the sex jokes are funny, but I don't understand a lot of them. So, you know, the humor, the surface level relationships, I think, are different. I think it's also just, you know, they're hyper aware. So there are currently three women on a 45-ish person team, and they're aware of that. Like, they get their women on the team. A lot of them have had practice with having women on their team because they were on high school teams that had female coxswains. So they're used to having us around. But, you know, they mitigate their behavior when the women enter the room. Like, they won't make the same jokes. And part of me appreciates that because I don't want to hear their most vulgar humor. Part of me feels like they shouldn't be making those jokes anyways. And part of me feels left out. Like, you're going to change what you're saying just because I'm here? Like, I want to know what you were going to say anyways.
Right. Like, if it's vulgar enough that you shouldn't say it in front of me, then should you be saying it at all? And that's kind of like, you know, that locker room.
Just like,
locker
if you want to make a sex joke about being a dude, if it's not offensive, then I want to hear it.
Right.
I don't really care. And I don't want to, like, be missing out on something funny if someone's going to, like, reference it later. I want to be a full member of the team in every way. And that means all of the social interactions as well.
Yeah, and I can imagine, obviously, you know, there's different relationships with, like, female and males are a lot of times, unfortunately, especially when you're kind of not forced friends, but a lot of times, like, teammates aren't necessarily friends you would have picked out necessarily if you're just on campus as non-athletes. Mm-hmm. So it's also the added pressure of, like, being team, like, not just like, oh, interacting with them on a daily basis, not like you are literally teammates with these people. So it's kind of like the assumed, not, I don't want to say forced, right? Like, Taylor and I were teammates and we weren't forced to be friends. They're not forced to be doing this now. So I know you said, like, it's all this whole culture that was kind of interesting and kind of felt unfair at times. Like, not unfair isn't the right word. This, I don't want to say not being equal. I'm not saying they don't view you as an equal inherently, but that's part of it. Like, the undiscovered biases that they may have against women. Is this something that you've tried to bring up to coaches, to teammates? Like, how have you navigated that space?
Yeah. So I think that I have never on my team directly faced sexism from my teammates directed at me. But as a woman on a men's team, I have a unique perspective into the kinds of sexual misconduct that happens on male athletic teams. And my team has a history of sexual misconduct. There have been many athletes that have been not officially through the unit, like, there haven't really been investigations, but there's definitely known sexual misconduct in my team's recent history. And learning about that, you know, made me sad. Mm-hmm. And last year, I got multiple reports to me. So people came and told me that they had friends that had been victims of sexual misconduct by my teammates. And that made me extremely upset because my teammates are my best friends. They're my community. And I know that none of them are trying to hurt other people. I think generally most people that aren't psychopaths aren't trying to hurt other people.
Yeah.
So the reason that they're hurting other people is that they don't know. They don't know that they're being inappropriate. They don't know that they're being hurtful. And that's unacceptable. And I think that it's part of my job as their friend and as their teammate to tell them, to teach them that they're doing it wrong. Because, you know, part of being in college is figuring out how to be a good person for the rest of your life. And it's abhorrent that men, college men, athletic men who are big and strong are never taught these things. But now I have the opportunity as someone that has already, you know, I'm their teammate, so they know me, they respect me, they like me. And I have the opportunity to have these conversations with them in a way that's not accusatory, a little bit lower stakes. And I think that it's my job as their friend and as their teammate and as a woman and just as a person to teach them about these things.
So you use the word sexual misconduct, and I know there's sexual misconduct, assault, harassment. Can you go into a little bit about the difference of those for our listeners?
So this is something I would love for you to have one of your experts really break down and make crystal clear. Again, I'm not an expert, but based on my research, there's kind of three tiers. The first is sexual misconduct, and that's very broad. So that can be anything from harassing statements to criminal assault. It can include, obviously, non-consensual. It can include penetration, unwanted sexual conduct, exploitation, harassment. So, you know, exploitation can be like, if you give me a blowjob, I'll do something for you. This is often comes up with teachers. Like, if you do this sexual favor for me, I'll give you a good grade. Obviously not happening athlete to athlete in that particular scenario. So that's misconduct, pretty
broad. But that would be more like the coach-player dynamic that you see in sport.
Yeah, a coach would do that. So that's pretty broad. Sexual harassment has the purpose or effect of interfering with work or education. Notice purpose or effect. So it's either intended to mess with my education or work, or it ends up messing with my education or work, even if it's not the intention. And that can include written, verbal, or physical conduct that shows hostility or an aversion to someone based on their gender or sex. It can be threats and derogatory comments. It can be jokes, innuendos, slurs, stereotyping. Those are super common on male athletics teams. And then placing or circulating pornographic or just graphic material non-consensually. So, you know, like sending nudes in team Snapchats. That's sexual harassment.
Yeah.
And then that can also include sexual advances, requests for favors, again, attempted exploitation. So again, there's not a clear line between all of these things. And a lot of harassment falls into misconduct. It is a subset of misconduct. And then the third thing is sexual assault. And that is sexual contact or behavior that occurs without consent of the recipient. And that is when a recipient or a victim is forced, coerced, or manipulated into an activity. So that's what we would, you know, I think traditionally think of as rape, but that's not just unwanted penetration. So that can be like groping, it can be touching inappropriately, it can be taking off someone's clothes if they don't want you to take their clothes off, it can be fingering, it can be all sorts of things. That is all sexual assault. And I think male athletes perpetrate sexual assault a lot more than they think they do.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the problem is.
Yeah, I think, and again, I believe your definitions are generally correct. It's just a big overview and there's a lot of overlap, right? Mm-hmm. So I think two important things that stuck with me is that people always just say, think of it as penis penetrating vagina, and that is what it is. Right. And so I remember with the Brock Turner case, people are like trying to minimize what, like, that it wasn't actually rape. And it's just very fascinating honestly, when I was in college, I know for a fact those lines weren't drawn. You know, that was still what it was seen as. And it's just this problem. And, you know, when they talk about, it's just locker room talk with males, and that's very common conversation. That's part of the problem. When you are bragging about these sexual advances and seeing these women as just sexual figures, that's going to be breeding ground, right? For sexual harassment, assault. It's the idealization of this masculinity of like, this is cool, this is right. And unfortunately, that can be violence. Even that's not your intention.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I think this happens a lot at parties. People talk about wanting, you know, I want to have a hookup tonight. I want to go to this party. And I think a lot of men think that, again, like you said, rape or sexual assault is just penis in vagina when the girl doesn't want it. But, you know, forcing someone to do a blowjob, that's sexual assault. All sorts of, like, walking up behind someone at a party and groping them, that's sexual assault. Making jokes about how someone looks when they walk in a room, that's sexual harassment. Like, it's a really broad definition. And a lot of things can be really harmful to people. And I think that a lot of people just don't know that. And I think that's where consent education is really missing, and where, you know, athletes in particular have a lot to make up for. Because when you're on a team with 40 other dudes, of course you're going to be talking about who's hooking up with who, who's having sex with who, and what that's like. We're in college. Like, I talk about that with my friends all the time.
Female teams do that too. Like, that's not the inherent problem.
Right. And, like, yeah, I'm horny. We all are. The problem is when that turns into permission to do whatever you want.
And when it becomes, that's what people are trying to do to fit in. Like, so for my own personal experience, I, after college, after at work, I had a manager at a work function. Now, this was like, it was like a giant kind of picnic. Obviously, this is way pre-COVID, a giant picnic field day, like softball, soccer game, like a giant company thing. And one of my managers, like, sexually harassed me in front of all of all of the colleagues, right? And so I was like, I felt so uncomfortable. Like, so I'll just give the context. I don't care. A former colleague that I was friends with that kind of had a thing for me, but I was keeping it like very, like, we never hung out outside work, nothing like that. He sent me a shirtless selfie. He was very intoxicated, and he was friends with everyone. And he, like, was at this picnic, and he, you know, brought it, like, he brought it up in a joking manner, and then my manager was like, well, did you return the favor? And I was like, what? And he's like, did you return the favor with a topless selfie back? I'm sure everyone at this, because I was in finance and I was the only girl on my team. I was at a table of 10 guys. And I would like to, you know, I'd like to think these guys are all my friends, so don't get me wrong. But then he said, like, yeah, everyone here at this table would love to see a topless selfie
that's
of you.
That's so disgusting.
And I was like, just sitting there. Yeah, I was so gross. And I was just kind of like, because, like, I want to be, you know, as bad as it sounds, one of the guys.
Right.
Oh, so I kind of, shrug it off. And I'm just like, oh, like, haha. And it wasn't until our other manager, who was sitting at the table with me, like, and truth be told, the manager I did this with, me and him have had some conflict before. So, like, while I was friends with many people at the table, I wasn't necessarily friends with that particular manager. So he wanted to check on me. The other manager came up and it's like, hey, like, I just want to make sure, like, just so you know, I don't think that's okay. Like, and I was like, okay. And just another male coming up to me saying that, I, like, started crying immediately. Yeah. 'Cause I was like, thank you. I was really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Thank, like, whatever. And I ended up this manager, I didn't even do it, brought it up to HR the next day, and he ended up getting fired for that comment. But I was like, if it wasn't for that other male, it's kind of embarrassing that I would not have said anything. I know I wouldn't have said anything, even though I was extremely uncomfortable. I was dreading, like, going to work. I was dreading making jokes. I was like, oh my gosh, did I do something that made it seem okay? Did I dress as, like, I'm like, my dress is tight. Like, I mean, my dress is tight. You can see I have a chest. Is that it? I will say, I know of distinct instances of sexual assault, at my campus where the person does not want to report it because they were drinking. They are underage. This is the first time that, you know, they're maybe experienced with alcohol because they're, like, they're away from their parents for the first time. This is the first time they're doing parties, able to stay out late. No parents there to be like, oh, why didn't you come home last night? Like, you might just sleep on a couch and think it's going to be okay. And then you just don't want to get in trouble. You don't want to lose your spot on the sports team. You don't want to lose a lot of things. It's just this environment of, like, not wanting to, females have this feeling of not wanting to cause a problem. And if I know you don't know me, Rachel, but any of my teammates would say I am the most confident, outspoken individual who's not afraid to call people on their BS.
Yeah.
But no, like, when it comes to this, like, I have been silent. I haven't spoken up. It's just because I don't want to, like, cause a wave are people to see me as that I'm the one that's being problematic or the one that I'm trying to make something. Because it's unfortunately kind of become politicized as well.
Yeah, I think that it often becomes, it feels like it's the woman's responsibility or the victim or the survivor's responsibility to do something about it. And I think that that is where the dialogue, especially on sports teams, needs to change. It is your it is each individual's responsibility to not sexually harass, assault someone else.
Yes.
As a woman, it is never my job when I walk into a party to not be sexually harassed. That is out of my control. I can do things to make myself feel safer. I can have friends in the room. I can know where the exits are. I can make sure I'm not drinking more than I'm comfortable with. But I can't control other people's behavior. It is everyone's responsibility to make sure they are not assaulting other people. And I think that men's teams can do more to hold each other to that, to have conversations about their behavior and how to keep each other and the people that they're hanging out with safe.
I'm thinking about it, and I know from our own experiences that we had no experience or understanding of, on the female side, what what sexual harassment and assault looks like, what to do if it happens. I know on the men's side, from my male friends at UNC, that I think eventually it was like very small training, but not much. Like it was not. It's not really teaching things like consent or what to do at a party if something happens. Mm-hmm. It was like really like, don't be raping students.
Right, but nobody
like,
knows what raping means.
Exactly. So I guess so since you identified this culture, not culture, this risk, is there anything that like your coaches or school is doing moving forward to like, so like you want to hold your friends accountable, great, but like it'd be great if we could, get it on the flip side, right? Yes. Like get it before it can even happen.
Yeah, here's what we're doing. So even before I got there, every year at the beginning of the fall, the team has a meeting where we talk about behavior guidelines as a group when we are at parties, because at my university, most parties are like the athletes mix with other athletics teams and they have parties with the two athletics teams, often like a men's team and a women's team will mix and have a party. And before the first one, we always meet and talk about what behavior guidelines are. So that often things that are on that list include like watching out for how much each other has had to drink and like not trying to get abysmally drunk, like not starting fights, using respectful language, the things that you would think. But there's always someone in the room that says, remember how big you are. I think that's something that men's teams do not talk about enough. Mm-hmm. My teammates are huge. Mm-hmm. My teammates are 6 feet tall to 6'9". They're big men. They weigh 200 pounds. And even the most innocent, well-intentioned teammate can accidentally back a little cross-country girl into the corner who's 100 pounds, 95 pounds, tiny. She's like 5 feet tall. I had a teammate accidentally back someone into a corner just standing around talking to his friends, and she was terrified. She was absolutely terrified to be behind him. And he had no idea. He was just like hanging out. And so I like went over and told him to move and she left and it was not a big deal. And he apologized to her later. But having that conversation, like you're really big. You need to, when you're walking through a room, you need to look down and see who's around you. Like the best way to move through a crowd when you're a 6 foot tall guy is to put your hands in the air, not in front of you. Because if you're walking forward, and your hands are in front of you and you grab someone, you're going to accidentally grab someone's boob. Like, basic.
And I will say it seems I want listeners to know, like, I'm not sure what kind of schools you went to, but at UNC where there's, we're not necessarily a party school by any means, but we would have parties and we had an active Franklin Street with a bar scene. And 100% on a night out, I would average my ass or boobs were grabbed or touched at I'll say conservative four times a night.
Oh, yeah.
Four times a night is the conservative average of me, just a normal, and I'm not a, I'm, you know, 160, 5'10". I am not like a little small, like it's like, yet. So as exactly like you think necessary precaution you have to take, because it, even if it was genuinely an accident, I mean, when it happens four times every night, I'm not going to say that all four of those, or it's not just all four are not accidents.
Right. Well, so, and when I've been when we've had these conversations with my teammates, sometimes my teammates will ask me like, what's it like for you to be at a party? And I'll say, well, when I walk in, I always know where the exits are. I always know where my friends are. And I check my six regularly. So I check directly in front of me, directly behind me, directly to my sides, and then in the diagonals. All the time. I just know where my body is in space. And my teammates don't have that experience. They don't know what it's like to be body aware all the time. Like, they're not getting catcalled on the street. They're not getting groped at parties. And so to tell them you need to pay attention to where your body is actually like really impactful. And they do, and it makes a difference. So
like after so many you know, inappropriate sexual things that I happened to me, I ended up being like the team's designated driver, because I was like, I'm just not even like, and then people are like, oh, why don't you want to drink and go out and have fun? And I'm like, I do want to do those things, but I can't. It's even hard for me to have fun when you're just unfortunately living with like fear of like, even if it's not happening, even it might not happen to me tonight, but it might happen to one of my teammates, and I want to make sure that I can just keep an eye out and that person that never feels, because this is, I was in college before Uber and Lyfts, so it was like taxi or bus, or like the campus bus or bus. So I just always had to feel like I had some sense of control if I saw something that wasn't happening. Ubers, I think, has probably helped a lot, but it's still like feeling like you're, it's things you think about that people don't really think about. Like all the guys, I would give my guy friends homes, and they're like, you're the best DDing always. Like, wow. I'm like, yeah, like I'm happy to drive you all home. Like I'm, it's not, but that's not why I'm not driving to be convenient. I'm driving to like, I'm being the designated driver to keep my teammates and friends and other athletes safe. Yeah.
Right. So the things we talk about include like having a sober monitor, watching out for your teammates, watching out for other people. Like, you know, we say like, don't sexually assault anybody. Pay attention to what's going on. Be as responsible as you can. And, you know, I think those conversations are important. But then something that I started doing with one of my other teammates, Alex, who's a dude, so one of my male teammates, is we had a conversation about what consent is, and we broke it down. And I think that's really important. And would it be helpful for me to like give you a rundown of what that is right now?
I would love that, because I think this is something that, so we do, so I get a little breakdown of our podcast listeners. We do have a few males that listeners, but I think a lot are female. And I think this consent communication can be happening on both sides. I think, I think females should know what consent is too. So I think this is super important.
Yeah, you're reminding me of something I wanted to say earlier too, which is that I think that those conversations about party behavior are also important on women's teams, because I know a lot of women's teams that like egg each other on into hookups and have the same kind of locker room talk and bragging that men's teams do. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it creates a culture in which like sexual exploitations are looked on as favorable. And, you know, sometimes they are, but it sometimes creates an environment where even female athletes don't feel comfortable talking about sexual encounters that they are not comfortable with, because they think it's cool to have a lot of sex.
I entered college my freshman year, I remember, like my first weekend, and like it was definitely a thing of finding out who the virgins were, and I was a virgin, and it was like kind of like, it was not, you know, I love my teammates, but it was definitely like, all right, let's see if we can change that, like it was not around the
So okay, let me break down consent, and I'll preface this, I say preface a lot, this is something that I think is explained poorly, and I think we can talk about later how I think consent needs to be better presented to athletes. But this was the way that I have found it most efficient and clear. A lot of places use this tea metaphor, like you're drinking someone else's cup of tea. I think that's terrible. I think this is much more efficient. So consent is clear, continuous, comfortable, and coherent. Those are four C's to go with fifth C of consent. So alliteration, nice, easy.
Beautiful.
So consent is clear. It's mutually understandable permission to do a behavior. It doesn't always need to be through words. So I think that's where a lot of people get tripped up. Like a head nod can a yes head nod can be consent, but that's a lot more vague. So the best way to get consent is to use your words and to ask.
Yeah.
So consent is clear. That means that yes equals yes, and anything that's not a yes means no. Things that also mean no are maybe, later, I'm not sure, I don't want to. If someone moves your hand away from them or their body away from you, those things all mean stop.
Yeah, I'm tired. That was always, like, I remember, like, it was so annoying. Yes. It's like, just because I'm on someone's couch, just because I stayed at a guy's house, you know, with friends who might be staying there and stuff. If I say I'm tired, that is not
that is me saying no.
Like, I shouldn't have to. Yes.
Yes, yes, I'm tired does not mean yes. Things that mean yes are yes, I want this, keep going. So consent is clear. I think that, you know, like leaning in to kiss someone, yeah, you should ask if you're going to do that if you don't know them. That's important. Mm-hmm. Consent is continuous. That means you need consent for every action, every time, whether that's a long-term relationship or a one-night stand. You need consent to touch someone in certain places. So, you know, if you're going to touch my ass, you need to ask me first. Touch someone.
I love that. Well, I love that you actually brought up the thing about the asking permission for kiss, because best case, they weren't expecting you to ask for permission and they're not offended and they might just tell you, like, oh, you don't have to ask me permission to kiss. But then that is consent for future kisses.
Right.
However, like, if it was a deal breaker and that's not what they wanted, you just saved your, like, and you read the system. So it's like really a win-win by,
like,
asking.
Leaning into someone saying, is this okay? That's never going to go wrong. Because if it is okay, then you're going to get a kiss. And if it's not okay, then you didn't sexually assault someone.
Yes,
so other things
exactly.
You need consent for include touching someone above clothes, touching someone under clothes, groping, like someone's ass or boob, kissing someone, like, both on their mouth and other places on their body. So, like, oral sex requires consent. Fingering someone, any kind of penetration, always use a condom. Side note, safe sex is great. Mm-hmm. Taking off someone else's clothes requires consent. So continuous, every time, for all things.
Well, and exactly why you say continuous, it matters, because, you know, I can think of situations where I was comfortable making out with a guy on a couch. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, that was my comfort level. Like,
right.
I like to move things a little slower. Like, that was all I was comfortable with for that day. And so then when all of a sudden, like, they start undressing themselves, I'm like, whoa, like, no,
yeah.
Like, that was not, like, I get our kissing might have been hot and heavy and that could be a next step, but that is not the next step I wanted.
Right.
And like,
right.
That, and then it just is a really awkward situation because he might have been a great guy and like his intentions could have been very good. But in that moment when that was more than what I wanted, that it's like, okay, now that's just a huge red flag and we're done, even though it could have been solved with an easy check-in. He just read it wrong.
Right.
I'm not
right.
saying he's a bad guy and he was trying to assault me.
Yeah.
I genuinely think he read it wrong and he made a mistake, but that mistake was enough for me to never talk to him again.
Right. So the third C, consent, is comfortable. I think this is huge for male athletics because comfortable means you're not feeling coerced into doing a behavior you don't want to do. And being big makes people uncomfortable. So, like, male athletes always, or most often, have more power in sexual encounters because they're big. So even if they're not trying to be aggressive, just their size, like, even my boyfriend, who's, I'm 5'6", he's 6 feet tall, he's not that much bigger than me. But if I'm lying on top of him, he can easily just roll me to the side. If he's lying mm-hmm. on top of me, I cannot move him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he is, like, very respectful and always asks for consent, so I'm not worried about that. But if I'm hooking up with a huge athlete and I can't move them, no matter what we're doing, I'm, like, a little bit more uncomfortable. So,
well, and it goes to size, right? And it's whether it's fair or not, if a 6'5", 300-pound guy is banging on a door, it's going to be much, and like you're like locked inside, it's much different than a 5'4", 100-pound, like, it's just, even if that your action may not be necessarily any more aggressive than or even just like a 150-pound guy, it's just going to be taken for rightfully so, just because that power dynamic.
Right. So I tell my teammates, consent is comfortable. So that means you need to, again, like we were talking about before, be aware of where your body is in space and make sure the person that you are having sex with, hooking up with, is feeling comfortable. That means checking in with them even when you're not changing your behavior. So like, are you still okay? Is this going well? Like, are you having fun? Everything good? And that is hot. I don't think people understand, or like male athletes understand, that consent is so sexy. Consent is hot. Yep. I've never met anybody that's been like, he asked me if I was having fun, and I was like, no, I'm not having fun. Ew, gross. But I only stopped having fun when he asked. Like, nobody is like that. It's so sexy. It's so hot to have someone check in on you.
Yeah, my husband, first kiss. Thanks, Josh. You're the best. Like, and it was like, I was like, oh, this is very respectful and nice and got tons of bonus points.
Right. So like, even I think the best way to make someone comfortable in the consent conversation is just check in when nothing changes. Are you doing okay? Mm-hmm. First of all, good safe sex practices. And second of all, like, hot. Keep going. Like, I'm going to want it more if you do that. And then the fourth thing, consent is coherent. That means that if someone is too drunk, too high, too tired, too whatever, to be able to know who, what, where, when, why, or how, they should not be having any kind of romantic interaction with anybody. They should be going to bed or seeking medical attention, depending on how out of it they are. So something like, if you or your partner is lacking the coherence to know what's going on around you, who you're doing something with, what time it is, where you are, that is not consensual and you must stop. So again, like at parties, teammates should be looking out for each other. If you see that a teammate is so drunk they don't know what's going on, it's time for them to go to bed. It's time for you to break up whoever is hooking up with who on the couch and say, no, this isn't consensual, like, let's stop here.
The thing that, like, it's so easy to remember, like, because this is like an easy rule that, like, I told like my younger teammates, I'm like, if you're drinking and you think you want to, I promise you it'll be just as good the next day.
Right.
So like, then make that decision again the next day. And guys should be doing the same thing. If like, I don't know how much he's been drinking. If you have to ask that question, mm-hmm. it's probably a good indicator that like, if you're guessing, like, okay, just text her tomorrow. She's one, going to respect you more. And two, it'll still be just as good, better. Maybe she won't be as tired. Like, who, like, just wait 24 hours. Like, it's just so, like, there's going to be opportunity if it is in fact consensual.
Right. And I think that a good like rule of thumb with consent is in general is if you're like, is this consensual, and you're wondering, it's probably not.
Yeah.
So like, I tell my teammates, like, it's always fine to go ask, like, if you think you might be too drunk or if like you're not sure what's going on, like, you can go ask a teammate for help, have them vibe check you. But it also probably means that it's not a safe thing for you to be doing.
And on that same thing, people who are like, I'm friends with guys, like, I've vibe checked my guy friends before. I'm like, hey, you should not, like, he was too drunk. And there's nothing wrong with me telling another guy, you're too drunk. Like, because at that point, like, if he's too drunk, like, he shouldn't be trying to decide if the girl's too drunk.
Right.
And it's just a messy thing. He shouldn't be doing it for himself. He's not being able to check. So don't be afraid, males or females listening, don't be afraid to like check in with your friends of any gender and send them home. Like, it's
right. That's just the safe, responsible thing to do. Those are the things that we did on my team. I'm also on the university's presidential, like the president's sexual misconduct prevention or sexual assault prevention steering committee. So I work with the university on sexual assault policies in general, and I'm trying to make the practices that we do with my team kind of more universal and develop it for athletics in general. Another really important thing that we have an organization on campus that's devoted to, it's not athletics exclusive, it's everyone, and it's devoted to bystander intervention training. And that's not as relevant during COVID because there aren't bystanders to most sexual or romantic interactions because we're not going to parties.
Right.
But before COVID, having the conversations that are more based around like, you see something unsafe going on, what can you do? How can you look out for each other at a party? They do that a lot. So we go to some of their trainings as well. I have mixed feelings about how effective that is, but
I get you. Like, why, like, shouldn't we be stopping it than having the bystanders? Right. But, you know, it's, I think, like you said, it's not harming anything. Right. And maybe it'll be easier to listen for some people that are like, I would never sexual assault someone, but they can instead listen to this and realize like what is okay and what's not okay in kind of a roundabout way.
Right.
Honestly, so that was like the questions that I had. Is there anything else like that you want like as a takeaway to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, so I wanted to a lot of what I've like been thinking about as I've been doing these things is what's missing from conversations about safe sex in college and safe sex on athletics teams, especially men's athletics teams. Is it okay if I just jump into a few of those things?
Please, yeah.
So the first thing is, I think that a lot of the way that we talk about safe sex and consent is as a conversation. It's like, let's have a conversation about bystander intervention. Let's have a conversation about consent. And those things are valuable if and only if everyone understands what consent is. Mm-hmm. Consent is not to be defined. And when you walk into a team meeting and all you do is discuss what you think consent is, that leaves a lot of gray area, because a lot of people think that the only definition of sexual assault is penis and vagina without asking first. And as we've talked about, that's not the case. So I think that instead of starting all of these things as conversations, yeah, that's maybe an easier way to get buy-in from athletes, but really I think the easiest way to get buy-in is just to explain it to them. Not in a way that's condescending, not in a way that's using weird metaphors, but like straightforward, to the point, and realistic. I think that something else that's missing is that received presentations about consent before, it's usually from like a 40-year-old woman that's employed by the university. Like, mm-hmm. she has an important job. She is usually the one that does the investigations into these kinds of things, but she often doesn't address drinking, which is obviously central to all of the conversations we have about athletics teams. Like, sexual assault happens when alcohol is involved. Also when it's not involved, but like that's central. Explained by someone that understands what it's like to have sex with other college students, like what the kind of scenarios you're going to be encountering are. Having, you know, teammates explain it to each other, other athletes explaining it to each other, other students. And that's difficult because it requires people to get engaged and get involved. What has been valuable about this for my team is that they know me, they respect me, they know that I'm not trying to be annoying or like too aggressive or too bossy. They know that I'm
retory. It's not like you're doing this because you have a checklist to talk to every single woman and man's team about this general thing that's not tailored and they don't know. It's like, I'm saying this obviously because I have your best interest. Right. I'm saying this from a place of love towards you guys. This is coming from a place of wanting us all to like be on the same page, not an accusatory tone.
Like, the lacrosse team at my school has had a lot of sexual assault problems. They don't, like, our athletics department doesn't have any mandatory sexual assault training or prevention training. Yeah. Which is, first of all, a problem. But, like, when they do, it's always the 4-year-old. What if I walked into that room instead? I know what it's like to be a college athlete. I know what the parties are like. I can explain it much better, and maybe they'll listen to me better. Students explain it in a way that is taken seriously is really important. Then I think that the third, and I think the last thing, is that teammates need to be holding each other accountable. Like, mm-hmm. when I hear about sexual assault, I shouldn't be trying to like shuttle it away, not let the coach hear about it, and protect the person that sexually assaulted someone. Obviously, it is always the survivor's decision to report a sexual assault for or with the university. I hear about a teammate that is doing something inappropriate, I should not try and hide it. I should be like, yo, what's going on? I heard something weird happened. I think that often men's teams like protect each other from facing consequences for their behavior. And that only increases the likelihood that women are going to feel like they're being the burden. Like, I would never be ruining someone else's life by reporting a sexual assault that they had perpetrated on me. They ruined their life by assaulting me and my life too. And now they have to face the consequences for their actions. And I think that teammates, it's fine to talk about sex in the locker room if it's respectful. But when you're talking about sex in the locker room, include talking about safe sex and making sure it's consensual. Mm-hmm. When you're like, yeah, I hope it changes the narrative in a way that I think is important.
Yeah, and I think too, like, I was doing research and it looks like, I can't tell if it's like certain campuses, but I saw on many campuses, these, there's a large increase in sexual assault at the beginning of each semester. So coming back from the summer and then coming back from winter break. I'm not sure if it's part, honestly, I'm not even going to speculate if it's because people are coming back. Maybe they didn't drink as much. Tolerances are down. But the time to have these conversations is before it's a problem.
Oh, yeah.
So like there's no shame in like changing the conversation, listening, and you're a coach, maybe talk with your captain. If you're a captain, maybe talk with your coach. See if there's a good time that you can like set aside just this special time. And maybe you're a coach, like if you have a male coach, maybe that coach doesn't have to be there and you just fill him in after.
Yeah, we never.
I think that's the problem. And you brought up a very interesting point earlier about the in a nice way, a lot of coaches, from my understanding, I won't mention any specific schools, you know, it's not a UNC problem, have underage drinking.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of coaches choose to kind of do the, I don't want to know about it, leave me out of it. Didn't know you guys drank. Like to kind of distance themselves from it. And I think that leads then to problems when it's not on the curriculum, if you will, of like having these tough conversations about drinking. Like, I wish so badly, when I had no clue what like alcohol was when I entered college, I so wish that someone sat me down at the beginning of this like semester and was like, hey, just so you know, one shot equals one beer equals one wine. Two, for someone who's, you know, this weight might be good.
Yeah.
Three, if this was good. Because instead, like, just so you know, it might be delayed enough. Like, there's certain things, like with drinking, and then again with consent, that like people, like a coach doesn't want to know if you're hooking up with, you know, the basketball player. But athletes or teammates are getting sexually harassed, sexually assaulted. That will not just change their life, but it will definitely impact their playing ability. So these conversations need to be had. Like, now I'm not glad that, you know, these different scandals and things have come to light, like with the U.S. women's gymnastics team, but like it got the conversation started that not happening.
Yeah. And it's so, I mean, obviously that was horrible. And this is a like completely different scenario with male athletics teams assaulting women on other athletics teams. But yeah, I think that like it was hard for me to talk about sex with my teammates the first time I did it, like saying penetration with 45 other teenage, like 18 to 22 year old men was like, yeah, there were a couple giggles, but now I can, you know, get through it really easily and it's not that hard.
Be awkward the first few times, but they know it's coming from a good place.
Right,
like that should
so
not be
much power in using correct terminology, correct definitions, and clarity. And those things are what make having like interactions across campus safer. You need to have clarity. You need to have definitions. And it's okay that it's scary the first time. And it's okay that it's a little weird. It's okay that it's a little bit funny, but like it needs to happen.
Yeah. And the other important thing I want to do is like, don't let people joke about consent. Like I've seen comments when these types of things come on, they're like, oh, what, do you want me to have a contract that like I sign up? Like where on today's podcast did you hear us say, get out a full on contract and have them sign and date six months? Like that's not what it is. And by minimizing it and trying to say that asking for consent is like dramatic, it really hurts the mission. And if you have a problem with asking for consent, like you had to take a deeper look at what those issues are and why.
Yeah. And I think like last thing, it's interesting in COVID to like be having this conversation, because I think that like consent exists in places other than sex. Like there's consent involved when you ask to take off your mask around someone that you're close to. Like there's consent involved in getting into someone else's car. All of these different things require consent. And I think that, you know, that's important to remember too, and an easy way into the conversation for some people that otherwise might struggle.
No, I love that. Respecting humans in COVID, in parties, in sex, and, and it's just, let's just all understand that we all have different boundaries, and whatever those boundaries are okay. And being able to vocalize those boundaries.
Yes, absolutely.
So I am going to leave our listeners on this note. Rachel and I were talking before this, and we were just doing some research and trying to see that. And we were really surprised on the lack of research around like female sexual assault. Like, we saw a large range of statistics, few studies, small sample sizes. And so we're just going to encourage you, if this is something that you're interested in, please encourage research being done here. Be an advocate for your team, your teammates, and your friends on all different teams. This is something that can be a university-wide thing. Look up your campus's resources. Send that text out, like out of the blue. Send a text to your teammates like, hey, I just found our campus's sexual assault, you know, help, survivor support, text line, here it is. Like, you don't need context to do that ever. Like, don't feel like it's a big thing. Like, that's just you being a good teammate. Like, people send funny Reddit links, you can send this helpful link. Or two, one third of sexual harassments, people never tell their stories. So when you're having these conversations, be very aware that like, if you try to minimize a woman to what she is wearing or not believe her, it's very possible that, like, and you talk about it to someone, it's very possible that that person has suffered from sexual harassment or sexual assault. So, like, be very mindful when you have these conversations before you start hating women, doubting women, putting lies into the universe or doubt. Just have the benefit of the doubt that it happens. And it is so underreported. It says about 77%. I saw anywhere from like 77 to 90% of cases go unreported in the United States. And those numbers just, unfortunately, it's really sad, but the unfortunate reality, because these women now know that they can report it, but they weigh the risk of not being believed, or they're not facing consequences, or the stigma around having that information come out go unreported. So I just want to challenge everyone on the way they think and talk about this, and be empathetic. Just assume, like, it's much safer to assume that a woman you're talking to has been the victim of sexual harassment or assault. And go with that empathy. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Rachel. We will be in touch. And thanks again.
Of course. I was happy to do it. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.